Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this podcast. It is a CDH Conversations podcast in collaboration with the EAVCA. As usual, this is the second one that we're doing as a four-part series throughout the year. This podcast, we have with us Caroline England, and she is a change management expert. We will be talking about unlocking the power of change, navigating mergers and acquisitions with the winning formula. The reason for this podcast is really to discuss what change management can do to an organization that is going through an M&A or a merger or an acquisition, and to discuss how it is that change management can affect businesses which are thinking of going into mergers and acquisitions in this region. So firstly, let's start with who else we're joined by, and we're joined by Jackie Iminza. Jackie is the current CEO of the EAVCA, and so we're delighted to have her with us. And Jackie, I think what we can do is start with telling us about what the M&A landscape looks like and why it is that it's important to discuss change management in this context.
Thank you, Njeri, for having me. My name is Jacqueline Iminza. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for East Africa Venture Capital Association, as well as the interim CEO. For those who are unfamiliar, the East Africa Venture Capital Association is an umbrella network for private capital providers in East Africa. Our mandate is to catalyze investment inflows into the region by working with investors, business owners, and external stakeholders to positively influence the local business environment. Our mandate is prescribed through four main pillars of advocacy, research, training, and networking. So basically, we promote partnerships in East Africa between capital allocators and businesses by showcasing opportunities for investment in East Africa. Going into your question on the trends of mergers and acquisition activity in East Africa, 2022 was a great year for M&A activity, where 22 transactions were recorded in East Africa. And this is up from 17 transactions recorded in 2021. This implies an increased appetite for M&A activity. And according to I&M Babbage report, some of this is attributable to higher appetite for inorganic growth from regional businesses, where businesses are leveraging capital towards inorganic growth by expanding through acquisitions. So this is definitely contributed to the increased appetite of M&A activity in East Africa. The other thing that contributes to this increase in M&A activity, I would say, is negative economic impact of COVID-19. And this has created an ideal condition for consolidations. If you look at the funding landscape right now, in 2022, the region received a lot of tech VC funding coming towards these sides of the market. But there's been a global funding decline, and that is also affecting the fundraising environment. So with the decline in funding globally, we anticipate that most companies are going to pursue acquisitions as a way of, you know, surviving the tough times in fundraising, especially for those who are maybe forced to raise a downturn due to the, you know, valuations reset that's also going on in the tech VC world. In addition to this, it would be the success of African Free Continental Trade Area Agreement, which is a catalyst for intra-Africa consolidation. So the success of this economic integration creates major opportunities for M&A transactions across Africa at large. Why is change management important? M&A mergers create organizational anxiety when these changes happen. In most cases, you'll find there's a dramatic shift in the operational or cultural aspects of the organization. And therefore, just being able to anticipate and addressing these organizational challenges can set the foundation for seamless and effective integration during M&A transactions.
Jackie, that's a very good point. So this is a perfect point to bring in Caroline. Caroline, can you tell us a bit about yourself and about your business, Impactive Solutions?
Yes, absolutely. So first, Njeri, thank you so much for having me. And then I guess one of the interesting story is maybe why am I in Kenya? Because I'm half Swiss and half Swedish. But in 2007, I went to Canada to learn English in a language school, but all my friends were Kenyan. So I learned English with Kenyans. So slowly they started being back to Kenya and I started coming to visit them, and Kenya won my heart.
That's a great endorsement for Kenya.
Definitely. So that's absolutely, I'm not planning on moving out. So maybe more a bit on my professional career. So I did a bachelor degree in corporate economics in Switzerland, and then I moved to the US to do an MBA because MBA was very prestigious, and I learned a lot, but I also felt that MBA were not focusing so much on the people and the human aspect, even though my MBA focused on organizational behavior. So because if I have one master, why don't I have two? So then I went on and I did a master in social enterprise, which gave me a different perspective on business, something that with my family of entrepreneurs, I didn't know exactly. And slowly throughout my career, I worked mostly in corporates, but I always find myself in roles where something was not working for me or was not working for others or was a bit challenging. So we always discuss and everyone was always coming to me to see how can we improve, what else can we do, etc. So naturally, we worked together on improving first maybe some small processes and then some bigger reorganization or restructuring, right? And as I was growing in my career, I realized that what I'm always doing is change. We are always changing something. And in my last corporate job, this is when I fully integrate change management, where as per the big title, change management, not only in practicing without exactly knowing what change was. And I really find the love for change and the love for people. And you cannot do change without people. That's what I realized. And I'm sure you guys are familiar with it. And so COVID happened and I wanted to move to Kenya. And I was thinking how, because all my friends were Kenyan, so no one knew anything about immigration. So I decided to build a company and to do what I do best, which is change. So this is how Impactive Solution was born. And let me tell you, the few months were a bit chaotic, but slowly I get to build a network to become a board member in the French Chamber of Commerce. And now we have a company focusing mostly on change and on people. We have different services, but the biggest one is a strategic change. We work with companies in the US, in Europe, and in Africa. Well, Africa, mostly Kenya. We work with companies that are going through changes and we help them navigate it, especially when there is leadership change, rapid growth, restructuring, team redundancies, and of course, M&A. So I guess that's why we're here today. And the second thing that we do is workplace culture assessment and transformation. So that's mostly when a company feels maybe a bit stuck, wants to scale, or have other issue with teams.
So what is change management then? If we're going to go to the practical aspects, what is change management for a company going through a mergers and acquisition or an acquisition?
So maybe let me start with just change, because change is super simple when we think about it in theory, right? We have a current state and we want to go to a future state. So in the middle, we have something that we call the transitional state, and that's where the change management strategy comes in. So when it comes to M&A, it's a bit more complicated because we bring two different entities together. So we need to talk a bit about what do they have in common and what are the differences that they have. So when it comes to the current states, we have to analyze both of the current states to ensure that there is no culture clash, to make sure that no employee will be demoralized, that we foster engagement and productivities. We then help reducing the resistance to change because we communicate in different ways. It's highly recommended to have business champion. So people that are helping navigating the change from both entities, and then to avoid the integration challenges. This comes with managing people, with talking to the people in both companies to understand what are their fears, what are the challenges, what makes them feel insecure or maybe angry sometimes, and then what drives them, what makes them thrive, what makes them happy at work, what do they love to do. And by creating focus group and talking with each other, this is how we really are able to start. And I think change management strategy, of course, you know, in the work environment that we are in, it has to be very planned. And we have to make sure that we don't forget any bit of it. But I feel that focusing on the people throughout the process is really the most important things. And when you have someone that is either a leader, a manager, or someone else within the company that comes with, you know, an issue or something that is bothering them, creating a space for them to speak about it really helps.
Yeah, I think the difficult thing about something like change management is, first of all, when is it the ideal time to start the process of change management? That's one question. And the second question is, how do you convince people that it's not something that is just frivolous? How do you convince businesses that it's actually very necessary for the integration of the two businesses in a merger, or for the integration of the one business that's being acquired?
Let me start with the first question. Change management starts with the due diligence of the team dynamics of both of the companies and of the culture of both of the company. And you can imagine that it can be very tricky because sometimes we talk about cultures and companies have cultures on website, right? What are their values? Or they have, the culture is maybe into HR policies or things like that. But the culture of company is really within the behavior that are being fostered within the company. So that's the first step. The first step is really being able to fully, transparently understanding the culture of both companies to see how will they be integrated. And then, of course, once the merger or the acquisition goes through, then we can full on start the change management strategy per se. But I believe that an M&A will be extremely successful from the get-go. Everyone has a common understanding of how do we integrate our teams? How do we integrate our processes and our system to make it not only efficient and, of course, providing financial gain, but to make sure that everyone is happy, for lack of a better word, but happiness, you know, means that you're in a healthy work environment, that you understand your job, that you're able to perform your job, and that you're not surprised or that you don't feel this big resistance to change, which is often led by fear, which led me to answering your second question, which is how do you convince people that it's necessary? So we've seen often that if someone is just throwing you in this other company and tell you figuring out, you will feel uneasy. You will feel like something is missing, you lack guidance. So depending on the position that you're getting at, you know that, okay, you need to talk to people, you know your job, so it's maybe not, it's not something really new. But how do you do about the culture of the new workplace, right? If you're an entrepreneur and you build your own company, it's even different. How do you create your own culture? And if you have someone that is by your side and that is just telling you, okay, step one is this, step two is this, step three is this, it makes it just easier to do it. And we're not here to tell people exactly what to do, but to guide them, to ask the right question, to just make sure that people can be reassured. And reassuring doesn't mean lying or omitting things, right? We can be frankly honest and saying that there will be huge changes. And as a leader, you can also feel scared. And when I've been talking to some leaders and I've asked them, okay, you're going through all these changes, but how do you right now, how do you feel? Because the entire company is relying on you to make them feel better, but how do you feel? So that's something that slowly by talking to them and literally just being very conscious of how people feel helps going through. And we've seen many cases where cultural integration fails. Why? Because the transitional state in between the current and the future is not managed well, right? And that's often because we have so many other things to manage within an M&A.
Correct. Because the priority is normally on the legal documentation, actually rule of due diligence, etc., and not necessarily on what happens after the transaction is completed. But can you give us examples of the practical steps that can be taken once a company or, you know, the parties are on board to manage the change process? What would be your first step? I know you talked about having champions within the organization, but what are the practical aspects? Is there like a checklist? Is there something that people can be guided by?
Yes. So the very first question is why? Is really defining and understanding your current state, right? And then understanding where you want to be. Because sometimes we tend to jump into everything and we forget to really assess that. So the current state should be assessed in various ways. So of course, you within your company, you probably have find bottleneck or things that are not exactly working and that you want to change. Since you're in this midst of big change, you have the right, or let's say it's the good moment to also think about a few things that you would like to change. So not only the culture integration, but maybe bettering the work environment, the process, maybe it's decision making, task ownership, etc. So the first step is do a deep dive into your current state, what is working and you want to keep and what is not working and you don't want to keep, and ask questions to all the stakeholders by survey, focus group, etc. That's step one. You need to analyze what is the resistance to change or what is the readiness to change. What is happening right now within the company? Where your company or one of the company going through so many different change all the time and nothing is really stable and we were promised so many different things and it's not really happening. So then we need to work on that fear, right? So that's for the current state, then the readiness to change, then we need to plan a full-on change strategy. Change strategy is, in my opinion, complicated maybe when we talked about it, but to make it simple, we start by creating the why the change. So you have this communication plan that is going to be brought by a line or by having everyone understanding why the change. So people don't fear, people understand why will the change be beneficial for them. Then there is one step that I miss, which is getting the business champion. So having people that are really willing to have the company going through that change. So they will be your people voice. They will be people that are really involved in fostering the change within the company. Then is launching the communication plan. Communicate, but not only sending a bunch of email. You have to have manager extremely involved with their team to again reassure, to again explain why we're doing the change and how we're doing it. Now we need to focus on the behavioral change, right? So the behavioral change, sometimes it's soft skills. Sometimes we need to learn new processes. Sometimes there is new line of reporting. And so how do we foster that? And that goes by workshops and trainings and maybe mentorship program or, you know, other safe space to foster innovation in a different way. But it's basically teaching people what other behavioral change that they need to do. And to that, we cannot, of course, do a workshop in 4 days and explaining everything. It has to be something that allow the employee to practice on their daily business. Then the third step is this whole feedback loop and integration. How is it working for you, right? Is there something that we're missing? Is there something that we thought would work for you, like a new process is? Because we get into the unknown. So we need to make sure that the strategy is not static and that with the feedback loop, we can always go back and adjust as we go. Because humans are complicated. So maybe we think that, you know, upon the analysis, we've seen that, okay, there is a new reporting line that will facilitate decision making. But at the same time, we worked on other things and now the decision making are being so complex. Why? So we need to be able to be extremely flexible and to work on it right away. So that's the different step that I would use.
I think the interesting thing that you talked about is like the different steps, but within an organization, first of all, there are different cultural practices that come into play. There are different opinions within the company. How do you know which one to adopt within the company? And then, as Jackie had said before, you know, like with the example of the acquisition of the bank in the DRC by KCB, a Kenyan company, how do you deal with the cultural differences then?
Okay. So my answer is going to be simple just at the beginning, but you talk to people, right? You need to talk to the main stakeholder and understand, is there a leadership alignment? Which culture is being integrated? What are the best processes for everyone to work, right? That comes after the need assessment. But the culture bit, this is when there is different strategy that comes in when there is two companies being performing an M&A within two countries or more, which we called the local North Star. So basically, what we call the North Star within the company is the company culture, the common direction, the value, the vision, the behavior that are within the company. Then at a national level or at a local level, we have the local North Star. So it is based on the global idea of where we're going, but has nuances from the different culture, from the different market, from the local employee that are working in there.
Yes, I get that. And so you adopt the culture of the locals, or do you try and impose, or at least, you know, bring in your own cultural values that from the company that is the acquirer?
So I think that's a brilliant question, because I think it should be a mix of both, right? I think there is the leaders that have, or the CEO, whomever is leading the company, right, has a vision for its company. So we cannot destroy that vision. It has to remain somehow, right? But when it comes to the culture of the company, to how we behave, to how we do stuff, this has to be tailored to the local market. I'll give you one example of a value, okay? Within the company, we focus a lot on trust. And then we say trust is one of the biggest value that we need to have within each other, etc. If you go to Switzerland, in Switzerland, our entire economic and government system is based on trust. People pay the bills, but we really rarely have someone coming to check. Whereas in Kenya, for instance, if you want to use public transportation, you have to pay before getting into the matatu. When it comes to businesses, if I order anything in Switzerland, well, I'll pay once the service is done, once the delivery is being received, etc. Whereas in Kenya, you'll have to pay in advance a certain percentage at least. So then how do you use that word trust in Switzerland? In Switzerland, it's mostly implied. So maybe that will not be the best value to have. You should have other things. Whereas in Kenya, trust would be something that maybe needs to be fostered. That's something that we really want to integrate within the culture.
And I think that's really accurate. But I think what is necessary is the time or an understanding of each of the different businesses and their different cultures, which unfortunately people don't necessarily do in time or at the time of a merger and an acquisition. And so it's important for them to make these considerations now. The other thing that I wanted to ask is, if someone is willing to take them through the change management process, how long does it take, first of all? And second of all, how do you measure the success of the change management plan?
The first question with how long does it take, let me tell you, every single of my clients ask that question. And my answer is often, we don't know. We hope, depending on the number of employees, depending on the complexity of the transitional state, like from the current state to the future state, that it will be smooth. So I will say, for full integration of SME within another SMEs at a local level, if everything goes well and if we're lucky, I will say 2 years. And I know everyone is like, no, but can we do it in 6 months? Can we do it in 5 months? But of course, we can do it in less time, right? But if you want to make sure that the change is sustainable, we need to take time. It doesn't mean that we're going to bombard people with emails every day, meetings every day, workshop every day. Really not. It means that we give the space to people to integrate the change as we go along. And it can even take longer, right? And I think that this is so important to be able to work at the speed of the people without jeopardizing the financials of the company. And the idea will be with such training that we start with something small, we let them build on it. Then we meet them again a few weeks later and we continue the process. And along the way, they have their either mentors or their leaders that is reminding them that this is something that can be used. This is a new behavior that we're trying to foster. Maybe having rewards or appreciation when the new behavior is being used within the company. So I believe that for change to be sustainable, it has to be a bit slower, which is something that is very difficult for leaders to understand. But to give you just a small analogy, it's like when we invest in a country, we invest in education and we invest in health. So we put a lot of money on it, but we have no idea what's going to happen. So there is this thing that changes the process, and we have to keep believing in the change by creating attractive program, by being fun when we talk. So there is this thing like that, making sure that people are valued for what they are. We don't think that they don't understand or we don't treat them badly. We accompany them. And for the measure, I think the best thing that needs to be done, because how can you know that it works? And that's what a lot of people do. They have a problem, they implement a solution, and then we don't really measure, right? So data is a huge thing. So when you start your cultural integration, I would hope that there is a need assessment that has been done on the culture of the company, and which should include employee satisfaction, engagement level, right? So that's one of the big things that we can see. Okay, is it working or not what I'm doing right now? Because cultural integration is the best thing. Or people, do they understand what they do? Do they have a sense of belonging to the company? Do they believe in what the new company is doing? Then it comes down to the successful integration and cultural integration of the company and the alignment between both of them. Is there achievement of synergy target and financial goals? Because even though we focus on the people, if everyone is happy and everything is working, but the company is not making any money, then we have another issue, right? Can we look at the productivity of each sector, right? Because I believe that the company had KPI before and we can still look at them. Is there minimal disruption to business operation? Is there an effective utilization of the resources or cost savings? Do we get positive feedback now from all stakeholders, from your customers, from your shareholders, right? Is the timely completion of the milestone and deliverable still there, or have we lost it in pace? And the retention of the key talent, right? Is everyone leaving the company? Because when there is a change, some people leave, but are we done now? Can we retain our talent? And the overall achievement of strategic objective, obviously, because everything is one, right? So you need to make sure. And to do that, you do it through survey, but you try to not create a huge burden on the company. So hopefully you can use some of the data that the company is already gathering.
I think all of those are such good points, Caroline. And I think it's just a matter of people understanding the difference between the practical reality and then the work that needs to be done in addition. I wanted to give Jackie an opportunity to ask a question. Jackie?
Thank you, Njeri. Carol, I just wanted to ask, and this is in regards to everything else you've talked about in terms of soft aspects of change management versus hard aspects of change management. My question is, can there sometimes be too much change that it creates more anxiety than it helps employees during these transactions? And two, how can you find the balance between these soft aspects of change, such as the cultural aspects during an integration versus the hard aspects such as time and, you know, number of people required for a successful transaction?
Mm-hmm. So that's such an important question, Jackie. Thank you so much, because yes, there can be too much change, and that can literally create anxiety, bring the stress level up to the roof, and then having people leaving, right? So for that, one of the bit of this, the change strategy, is to understand the readiness to change of both of the company, right? And if there is a change fatigue already existing, and where does it come from? I've seen often that change fatigue comes from empty promises. So we will tell you, we are here, we want to go there, this is what we're going to do, but we never get to the there. Or it's not properly communicated. You feel like you've done a lot of work through the change, but you don't see the results, right? So that's like one of the big issues with change fatigue. So when it comes to M&A, it's such a big change that's why I'm saying, like, let's bring all the change all at once, but slowly. So we tell the people, we try to really create that spirit that change is going to be the constant for a bit, but it's not going to be stressful because we're going to go at your pace, right? Easier said than done, obviously. It allows us to be proactive, to lower as much as possible that resistance and to have those safe space where people can come and they can talk about their fear or talk about the stress that has been generated.
Yeah. So can you give us examples of like success stories that there's been a successful implementation of a change management strategy?
Yes. So I have a few. So I wanted to talk about one that is interesting, which is a bit out of scope. And then I'll talk about more of a culture change. But the first one was, you know, change is everywhere. And change sometimes is in digital transformation, which we tend to forget because we add a new tool and we tell people, hey, stop using the old one, we're going to use the new one. And depending on what tool it is, people get stressed because they've been using it a lot. And then the adoption is slow. And then the business is slowing down because before the tool was working, the new tool is not. Why? And having a successful strategy within that is actually quite simple, is to ensure you first have those business champions, and those business champions are often part of the first pilot of that product, right? So they can tell you, this is working, this is not working, it's better in this tool, it was better in the other tool, et cetera, et cetera. So as we go along, we see that if we go with the people and we allow them to test the product, and the product is being launched, they already talk to their colleague and they're already convincing them that it's a good way to use the tool. So to take that very simple example, and now we bring it to something way bigger, that is culture, right? So imagine when you have a culture, the first thing will be what? If you compare it to first tool, second tool, you have to assess, what do you want to keep from the culture, from the thing that is working right now in the company that you don't think you want to change because it's working so well? What are the things that needs to be changed? So we start with that. It works very well when we have the leadership that are aware of themselves and aware of the thing that they're doing good and doing badly, or maybe not as good as it could be done, that are open to feedback. They don't get offended when there is this criticism happening of the things that needs to be changed. Same thing with all the management level. So when we have that first bit that is there and the leadership is fully engaged in going through the change, right? And you have the rest of the company that feels safe and secure to share what is not working. Because you can imagine that in toxic culture, it's very complicated that everyone will say, yes, everything is great and it's working. And they will mention some things like, my salary is too low, right? But then what else? And so when you first have those two things that people are feel good or safe to speak, that's the first step. Then the second step is the time. And with culture, it's complicated because we want to change many things. So what are the quick wins first? You start with quick wins because you make sure that whatever feedback the employee gave, they feel heard. So you start with some small quick wins that you can do. What are the small changes that you can start that you can do? You make sure that they are aware that those changes have been done. And as you move through it, you ask more questions and you start by having your priority on your culture. What are the most present priority, right? And then how do you convince people that change is good? Who are your promoters? Who are your business champions? And to give you a proper example, we worked with a company that had an extremely toxic culture where no one wanted to talk. So it took us ages, to tell you the truth, to have everyone opening up. And it started by slowly, slowly gaining their trust, applying their feedback right away and going step by step. But eventually, this is when employees are fully engaged. If I'm happy at work and I'm engaged and I believe in the vision, I'll go the extra miles without even you asking. I'm not stressed anymore. So I'm more innovative, more creative. And not only like in the term of like innovation in new product or new services, but maybe the work that I'm doing right now, I can do it 5 times more efficiently just because I have more time and I'm not just firefighting every 5 minutes, right? And slowly you see that when you just care about your employees, they care about your business and they care about your customer. And that's it. Sometimes we tend to focus on customer centricity, but I always say that if we have this employee centricity, don't you think that then the client will be serviced better? Like, for instance, you should actually give me an example in your company. What is the thing that you realize that by helping your employee do or having like whatever initiatives for your employee has improved your business? Do you have such an example? Because this is so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, for us, I think the real most important point, and I think for all services firms, it's about, especially post-COVID, there's a change in attitude towards working from home or, you know, being at the office, you know, rigidly all of the time. And I think that change has prompted a lot of employee satisfaction because they then realize that they can do their work from any location as opposed to just from an office. And COVID really brought that to the fore. But I think what is important for us to get from this conversation is that a few years ago, this conversation would have been much more difficult. And because employers realize that it's much more difficult to get good employees and to retain them, they're willing to do much more in order to make sure that change is managed and it is managed well. And so this conversation is very timely. I think what we can do is summarize. So tell us, Caroline, what are the key takeaways that you want people to get from this conversation?
So first, change is about people. Change is really about people. And people will help you with the processes and they will help you with the system if you focus on them. They'll help your business. That's one. Two is be proactive and be aware. That's why need assessment and asking questions and all that allows you to focus on proactivity versus reactivity. Then when it comes to M&A, cultural integration is often a break or make it within the M&A. So that's something that we cannot leave on the side. Then it's be transparent. You have to be transparent with your employees. Sometimes it's hard, but you don't have to lie. You can sometimes say, I don't know. It's okay. Maybe you don't know. And sometimes ego comes in and you're like, no, I can't. But actually, yes, because it makes people feel better. Everyone feels better. And plan. You need to plan. You need to plan. It's a project. It's a huge project. It's a lengthy process. You need to have a proper strategy that allows for dynamism and communicate.
Yeah, I think those are perfect pillars. And thank you so much, Caroline. Thank you, Jackie, for joining us on this podcast. I think it's been a really great conversation. One for someone who really understands that change is a necessary evil and one that can be managed in a very easy way if you do it the right way and if you do it with Caroline, really. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Thank you, Jackie. Thank you.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.